Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
And from Old Blood Noise Endeavors, Dan Pihacek.
Hello. Good to be on.
Hello, Dan. Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's been a good Monday so far.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. Dear listener, you'll probably know Dan from the Old Blood Noise Endeavors YouTube channel, from all the Dan Explains It All video series, but fantastically informative, wonderful videos all about the Old Blood Noise Endeavors pedals and other things, like kind of general stuff as well, where you go super in depth and present, you know, wonderfully weird and unusual videos that kind of, I love how they go so completely against the narrative, the sort of YouTube narrative of making videos look as polished and professional as possible. I love that you lean into the sort of weirdness of your videos, which makes them incredibly watchable and a bit different.
Yeah, I always love to see what Seth, our creative director, and the rest of the AV team do with that stuff. You know, we're in front of a green screen, and then to watch it back, it's just sheer joy to see how silly it ends up.
yeah, I enjoy it. I especially enjoy a lot of the cuts. Like, you do things like deliberate extended gaps at the end of cuts that will have you guys just sort of sitting staring at the camera for a little bit. It's wonderful. It's lovely because they're so fun, they're just a bit more lighthearted. No one's taking themselves too seriously. No one's pretending that, you know, because it's just pretending when people are trying to make things ridiculously high budget. Like, we're all still in our spare bedrooms, you know, with a camera and a lighting rig we got off of Amazon, and you know, it's lovely to see. They're very good, and you've been doing it a long time as well, the Dan Explains It All videos. That seems that's a long-winded series.
Yeah, I guess it started in maybe 2017. The first one was basically an explanation of series versus parallel, because we had just put out the XS, you know, distortion modulation pedal, and there was a switch to run them in parallel or series, and there was just the idea to do a little explainer of, like, what's the difference between these two sounds. And so they decided to have me as the presenter, and we just kind of, it was just a goofy in the middle of the build room shot, and we didn't know what to call it, and then joked about just calling it Dan Explains It All, and that just kind of stuck. We kept doing it, and it became the way that we approach our full-on, you know, sort of technical demos for every pedal release.
Yeah, they're great. I love that as well. I love that it's not just whenever you have a new release, obviously you get a Dan Explains It All video going super into depth about whatever the pedal is, but I love that you deal with broader topics as well. I was trying to think of another one I could think of that was a broader topic recently. Oh, I tell you what, I really like the fact that you've done, like, the utility pedals as well. Like, you did one that was really in depth on the not the slider one, the other one,
the ramper. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. And how the TRS works and how you can change that function of it by taking off the back of the pedal. Like that was a that was an incredibly geeky, you know, sort of in-depth of video about what is a relatively simple and, you know, basic utility pedal.
Yeah, it's a deep dive that you don't often see. Like as we've made expression devices, we've started to realize that everyone has a different standard and there's different tweaks of like, well, this value doesn't work with this, or this type of connection doesn't work with this. And so yeah, it's been interesting to do explainers on kind of expression overall and the specifics of how you can configure the expression ramper to work with just about anything. Because yeah, you don't see many deep dives on expression control standards.
No, exactly. But that's now, dear listener, we're going to talk about broader topics as well, and the new Old Blood Noise Endeavor stuff, and a whole bunch of stuff that Dan's into as well. But just to kind of go off on a slight tangent on those things, the utility pedals for Old Blood Noise Endeavors, they feel like something that must have had a huge impact on the company, on Old Blood Noise Endeavors, because whilst there are plenty of companies that maybe offer utility pedals as a custom thing, I kind of feel like you were maybe the first or the most noticeable to introduce these really simple things that gave people a different way to access other pedals that they had, anything with an expression in, for example.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's I guess the question. Yeah. I sort of finished it weirdly with an but
well, yeah, it that now I'm starting the answer weirdly, but yeah, I feel like the utility line, yeah, it sort of opened up some things, because the initial thing was, you know, we came out with like an ABY and a buffer with an EQ and a headphone amp, and they were all just sort of, you know, things that existed elsewhere. I mean, ABY pedals are all over the place, but it was just kind of like, yeah, but we'll make one with the Old Blood logo on it. You know, we'll style it in a way that we like. Yeah. The EQ buffer, similar deal. And I think it creating that utility line gave us room to explore things that didn't feel as out there. And now it's become this avenue, like with Signal Blender, to explore, you know, putting multiple devices in parallel, or with Expression Ramper to say, you know, this doesn't make any sound on its own, but it can automate a knob movement for you. You know, if a pedal has expression control enabled, you can attach an LFO to it, which in like the modular world is, you know, all over the place. But in the pedal world, you don't see as much of that kind of stuff. So I think the utility line is a fun way for us to explore, things that don't make sound on their own, but help you get different sounds out of what you already have.
I think I'll ask this, because I think when it first launched, I think me and Joe perhaps struggled to explain the best way to use it. But I think, again, just an interesting take on a utility pedal is the split meld. What, in your mind, is the best kind of use of that particular product? Because it seemed like quite an interesting concept, but at the time we were like confused.
Yeah, so that's a confusing one. That idea came from Seth when he was, I believe he basically had some sort of stereo TRS output that he wanted to route separately to two chains, and then bring those two chains back together into the Strymon Iridium, which takes a TRS input. And he basically said, I just want a box that kind of, you know, splits the TRS connection into two TS connections and then the other way around. And I feel like me, you know, me and Isaac, the other engineer, both were kind of like, so it's just like cabling, you know, I don't get why this should be in a case. And he was like, yeah, but it makes it so much tidier. You can put it on the board. It feels like it'd be so much easier to have it in a box. And so we thought, well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's something we can make. So we spun up the design. Seth did some really cool art for it and put it out there, and it's been really successful. It's basically like, it's, I think people want to overcomplicate it. They say like, oh, so split meld can help me, you know, I can use it like an ABY or like a signal splitter recombiner. And it's like, no, it's really just pure routing. It's taking a TRS connection and turning it into two TS connections. And you have two of those. So it's perfect for situations where you've got a TRS that needs to split out and then be recombined, or you can just use one at a time or whatever. So it's simpler than you think. That's the best way to understand it.
I think now you've said that, I'm like, okay, that makes more sense. I was like, I think when we first talked about it, I was like, so you can kind of split and you can do this. And I think, yeah, to your point, just absolutely overcomplicating it to the point where you've confused yourself. But no, that makes way more sense. So yeah, thanks for explaining that. But again, just an interesting one for, I think, you guys have got the single signal blender. But I think it's nice. Me and Joe were saying that, also, again, to appeal to the fans, that things like the expression ramper and stuff come in so many different color schemes.
Oh, I love that you do that. And is that a thing now? Because I think the first time I noticed it was when you did the Church's a signature pedal. You released the ramper and the slider in that finish, and you've just done it now with the new release, which we'll talk about later today with the float.
Yeah, we had done some like color schemes that matched, you know, Dark Star, Sunlight, and some that are just fun, you know, neon colors and just various combinations. But Screen Violence was the first one where it like took the art of the pedal and reinterpreted it in the expression ramper format. And so then, yeah, we did it with Float as well. And yeah, I think at this point, it's probably just something we're going to do with every release, because it's just fun. You know, it's fun to have that extra utility that just matches the new thing.
Yeah, it's really cool. And, you know, of course, because the utility pedals are so very affordable, like, you know, the ramper is $69, the slider is $44, you know, it's a cool thing that I wouldn't mind owning a couple of, you know. It's not like a new one's going to come out and I'm going to be like, oh, damn, I wish I had that one now.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to.
Yeah, it's a bit more of a collection rather than I only need one of these. So yeah, I feel like people exactly enjoy collecting very, you know, well, I've got the standard white one, but the next one I buy should be a different color, because why not? You know?
Interestingly, on that, just to kind of finish that, you're saying, you know, look at it like an LFO. And just in my, I was saying to Joe, I was like, right, I've got some spaces on my pedal board, which I think we were going to talk about on the Patreon later, but had a space for one mini pedal. And then you're like, that's like an LFO. And I'm like, why aren't I running that into the input of like another pedal on my pedal board? And I've got one space for like a mini pedal. I'm like, I'll just put that on there, and then I'll just plug that into the expression, and then I don't need another pedal. I can just have an expression ramper make the other pedal do loads of weird stuff if I needed to. So problem solved. I mean, I still think the slider is one of the
slider's the one for me. I appreciate that the ramper actually opens up, you know, a few more doors. I think it was maybe because the slider was the first one. I was like, oh, because I don't really like expression pedals. I don't like using them, but if it opens up a whole extra sound on a pedal, and, you know, with things like, you know, I'm playing a lot of the KMA Logan Transcend Drive and the KMA Chief Disruptor, which is their Big Muff style pedal. Both of those have expression outs, which essentially access the mid frequencies. So I can add like a cocked wah tone using the slider. And that's like a whole extra effects pedal, essentially, that I'm getting out of a, you know, a $44 utility pedal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah.
I feel like one of my favorite tricks with the ramper, I was just going to say, you plug that into like a delay pedal that has an expression control over time, and you just turn it into a chorus pedal. So yeah, adding that to your, just slotting it in for that mini pedal could definitely open up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess one of the things I was thinking about plugging it into, which I'm glad you're on this week because it's something that we definitely need to talk about. For the last couple of weeks, me and Joe have spoke heavily about that I've been buying the kind of old Moogafuga or Moogafuga pedals, of which I have recently...
You spent so much money.
Shush, no. Joe. Don't remind me. And one of the ones I hunted down for ages was the low-pass filter because it is the kind of traditional or the classic Moog ladder filter in a pedal. And I've spent more time looking for filter pedals than anything else. And then, you know, just as I kind of buy this Moog pedal and put it on my pedal board, you sort of release the float. So we should probably... you should probably convince me why I need to take off the Moog pedal and...
That's good. Let's talk about the float. Let's do it because this is the big one. This is you know very topically new because of course we've been talking Dan for like a month. I've been rubbish at getting my schedule together and actually getting you on an episode. But no worries. This has worked out very well because now you know the float's come out and we can actually talk about that. So
yeah, it's perfect timing.
The float, one of the best videos you've ever done. I really enjoyed the spacesuits. They were fantastic. Dear listener, you have to check them out if you haven't already. It's a wonderfully in-depth video about the float that really explains everything about it because I do feel like it's a pedal that needs explaining. There are a lot of controls. You've got like 10 rotaries, 4 toggles and 2 sliders on there.
iZotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start-to-finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on iZotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from iZotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using iZotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on iZotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the iZotope arsenal.
It's the longest Dan explains it all we've done, and I feel like I scratched the surface. You
know? It's like 30 minutes, yeah. Isn't it? So,
there's costume changes.
So let's talk about that. So it is in its simplest thing a filter pedal.
Yes, yeah. It is in a genre of pedals that feels fairly done. You know, a fixed filter right. to do cool resonant sweeps, or an envelope filter to do those kind of like quacky sounds, or float to have. Two entirely separate filters that can be fixed or can react to an envelope or can follow an LFO, or that LFO can be affected by an envelope, or they can be unsynced or synced to each other, run in stereo or series or parallel. Basically, I don't know if you guys know that there was another Old Blood video where we had Andy Othling in town, and the float idea kind of originated from him. So the video was just kind of us wandering around Oklahoma City and talking about the project as a whole. And yeah, he essentially just came to us with this idea of like, I want a pedal that has two like good sounding filters into it that can just sort of move on their own in unexpected ways, just give
shape to like long form ambient things. You know, maybe he's got different loops running and he just wants a filter to slowly close and open up and another one to do a different thing. And so we kind of threw every idea at the wall, and this was right. It was I think in January 2020 at the last NAMM that Old Blood was at. We were talking with Andy about this, and in February or March I started on it, and then started working from home March 2020. So this feels very much like my pandemic project almost, because I feel like I dove deep on this genre of pedal that I wasn't even super familiar with. Like I don't know if I've ever owned a filter pedal. I've played a handful, but.
Has it never been a thing that's resonated with you?
Not really. You know, I've enjoyed filter sounds, but it just hasn't, I guess, spoken to me as a player before. But then in developing Float, I suddenly was like, oh, well, now I love the sound of filters. And in particular, it started to open up these things when you use two together. Like when you have like a high pass and a low pass running in mono that are synced to each other, moving across the same cutoff frequency, it starts to sound like a phaser. But then maybe they're both low pass filters and you pan them wide and they're moving opposite each other, and suddenly it's like a panning tremolo. And so a lot of the interactions of two filters were what started to open it up for me as a user and as a guitar player. So it was a funny project where we kind of, you know, threw a bunch of ideas at the wall and were able to actually put them all and some more in the pedal. And it made me fall in love with this genre of effects while designing one. So
it feels sold. Like you've kind of pulled back the curtain.
Oh, yeah. And that, yeah, to actually sell you on it. Your other one, you can probably get a bunch of money for on the used market, and then Float will do a little bit more, presumably. So.
But yeah, it feels like with Float, you've kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit of what a filter pedal does, because there's so much almost access to what, I don't know if I'm explaining that well, but what would normally be locked into a pedal, and a pedal designer would give you a certain amount of controls over what they deem to be, you know, a reasonable sounding filter pedal. You've kind of given everyone everything.
Yeah, if you look at like a classic envelope filter design, it's usually going to have like maybe volume, sensitivity, direction, something like that. And so sensitivity can control, you know, how much it reacts to your playing, but it might not set how low the filter goes in terms of its cutoff frequency and how high that cutoff frequency goes. And so one of my favorite things with Float is to have an envelope that can react to your signal, but the filter doesn't move a ton. You know, a lot of envelope filter pedals, you have to be very careful with your playing dynamics to get it to work in exactly the right range. Whereas in Float, we have that min max toggle where you can set the minimum and set the maximum. And so you specifically define that range. And so, yeah, we were trying to just give the user the opportunity to round off some edges or fully open up the world of filters, however they wanted to approach it.
And can you run it? Because I purposely, when Joe said that you're going to be on the podcast at launch, I was like, I'm not going to watch anything on this, and I'm going to wait for you to come on, and I'm going to ask all the questions and the specific nerdy questions. So two ins, two outs. So I'm assuming you can route, you know, again, I think interesting you mentioned about Andy and kind of the ambient thing. So I'm guessing you can kind of use this like two individual pedals, right? So you can run it at two different points in your pedal chain or whatever if you wanted to.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You can, have one filter at the start of everything and another filter at the end of everything. You can do that true stereo with it, you know, if you want to do a stereo filter. You just, you know, plug your stereo signal into in one and in two. And you can also do, when you're just plugged in to in one and out one, it internally routes them in parallel. So basically your filter one foot switch turns the whole thing on and off, and then filter two is an extra filter that you can add in parallel to it.
Amazing.
Or if you just want to do them in series, you just throw a patch cable up top, you know, running from out one to in two. But yeah, I think I really like a lot of the kind of parallel mono stuff that it does, as well as the stereo stuff. So yeah, I think I've always internally thought of it as just a dual filter, but we've also been calling it a stereo filter, realizing, oh, that's, you know, people like stereo stuff, and this one has two, so technically it's a stereo pedal. There you go.
I could see this actually, you know, interestingly, although a guitar player, I can see this actually being really handy for synth players, especially like mono synth players or like people who have got big, you know, maybe stereo keyboards like an old Juno or something like that, where you could add this kind of analog filter to the output stage in stereo, and you could kind of get some weird and wacky stuff that way. So actually almost as like a studio tool as well, and like routing, you know, stuff out in stereo, having two different filters and them kind of playing off each other, I think is a really, really, really cool idea. Yeah, I almost see it, like looking at it, I almost think of it as two pedals in one. So you could really do some interesting stuff in terms of the routing, which I think is very cool. How, obviously you said it's kind of like your pandemic project. At what point do you kind of go, it's done? Because it sounds like you've put so much into it and so many different ideas and cramming loads of different ideas into it. What point do you go like, enough is enough, I think it's finished now?
I don't know if I really feel that moment. Like, it's I think I kind of don't believe that the pedal is done until it's out, even though it has to be done before that point. Because like with Float, it felt like it was, I think that one went through a lot of sort of changes throughout the prototyping process, because it can do so much. Like one of the early prototypes didn't have so I don't know if you've seen how the LEDs dim and brighten to show you where the filter is. Mm-hmm. So it's this really helpful visual indicator, because, you know, the slider, you can set your minimum and maximum, but you can't tell where the filter actually is in its sweep at any given time. And that was just from a coworker had played an early prototype where they were just standard on off LEDs. And he was like, I wish you could tell where the filter is. Like maybe there was an LED kind of dimming thing. And that was an amazing idea. So we put that in there. And then when we sort of passed it off to friends, they had ideas for, like our friend Andy Pitcher said, hey, it would be cool if the LFOs could not only sync to each other, you know, where filter two and filter one are linked to the same LFO, but also have those LFOs flipped. So like when one is high, the other's low and vice versa, but they're moving together.
That's very cool.
And so
that's
kind of found a way to sneak that in there as well. And so we kind of kept making changes. And I think at a certain point, it took me a while to realize that it was done, until suddenly I was like, oh yeah, I guess there's nothing left to add. So it can be tough. Usually that's the moment, is we pass around the shop, maybe a, you know, trusted circle of friends. And when sort of nobody has anything to add or any notes of, you know, just this could be better, this could be different, or maybe they have a note of could it do this, and we have to say, ah, no, that's actually just too much or too different from the main brief. But yeah, there's usually a moment where it's been out there in the shop and with friends long enough that we say, okay, I guess it must be done now, we can actually put this into production.
It must have been trickier with the Float, I imagine, than a lot of other pedals. I can just imagine, you know, when you're making a sort of four control reverb, or, you know, a fuzz or something, when it sounds great, you're like, cool, fine, this is there, because there's almost just one thing that's trying to do. But when you're doing something like this that has got to do 100 different things, it must be difficult to find that point.
Yeah, and a lot of difficult troubleshooting as well, where it's like, oh, I think it might not be working, and then I go, oh well, you've got the envelope active but the shape is set to random, and so you have to it'll move to a different frequency whenever you skip over like the threshold, but it won't linearly move. And so there's moments where it's like, oh, I think there might be a bug in here, and then we realize, oh wait, no, it's just, you just got to move the knob this way, because it's a pedal that really does require a lot of explaining to be able to figure out.
That's it, isn't it? As soon as you've got complicated pedals like that, there is going to be a point where it's going to sound crap. And you've got to make sure that people understand that that's due to where the controls are and not because of the pedal.
I think it's one of those things, isn't it? It's like you can design you can design a pedal. I certainly can't. I don't think Joe can either. But I know from doing a lot of stuff with Boss, and like you can come out and you can play and go, this is the best sound ever. And it's like, you know, Boss always intend for you to be able to get the it out of the box and set everything to 12, and that's like your go-to sound. But someone always finds a way to do something that it was never intended to do, but then that becomes the thing that it's like known for, you know. And you're like, oh, but also people just tend to break things in stupid ways, and like you say, you can just go, oh yeah, well, if I do this, this, and this, it sounds like that, and it doesn't sound very good. And I'm like, why would you do this, this, and this? But you forget that you can't be in someone else's mind. Like, the way someone approaches something will never be exactly the same as you want it. No one will ever interpret it in the same way. So I find quite interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach to, I feel like that Knobs at Noon thing is, so, you know, Old Blood tends to try to make weirder stuff, unexpected stuff, things that, you know, sound different from what you've heard before. But I think part of our approach is that we try to make it sound approachable when the Knobs are at Noon, and then it gets wild as you push the Knobs to their extremes. But Float, yeah, kind of by its nature, can't really follow that same template, just because it is, all the controls are so interactive and everything, that it's more like, okay, you have to sit down and really understand what's happening here, you know, to get the most normal sound. Turn the rate all the way down, sensitivity in the middle, resonance at like all the way down or maybe a quarter of the way up, and then move your slider. You know, it's you have to be a lot more specific with your approach to it. But I still like that approach of the pedal that sounds great with Knobs at Noon, and then you can find ways to push it into crazier territory.
It's definitely kind of almost an unspoken thing that I think everyone, when designing a product, has to consider, is it's not just the product, it's about how people will switch it on and experience it for the first 5 minutes. Like, and that the whole Knobs at Noon thing is a great example of that. Like, working for Ashdown Engineering is something that they came across maybe 10 years ago, is they were getting a reputation for making quiet amps. They, like, people were saying that their 500 watt heads didn't sound like 500 watts. And they couldn't work out why, because they're like, oh, their amps are 500 watts. They're not quieter than others. But it was because they were, first off, two things, being honest about the power rating on the amps, which not a lot of companies are. And secondly, that the controls were, what do you call it when a control works the same the whole way around? I can't remember. You can set an expression pedal to it. It doesn't matter. But it meant that, you know, the amp was giving you its, you know, stage volume at 10, 11 o'clock. But no one ever wants to do that. People don't like putting an amp above midway.
Right.
And most amp heads aren't, they don't move. They have all their volume in the first five, and then virtually nothing from 5 to 10. So many amps work like that. And that's become the standard. And because Ashdown weren't doing that, people thought they were quiet, because at 12 o'clock, they were quiet in comparison to an amp that was actually giving you almost everything for the first five and not very much for the last bits. So they changed their controls. They didn't want to, but it was just to lose the reputation. They had to do the controls the same way everyone else was, which sort of seems silly, because it means you don't have as, your control doesn't work properly, because, you know, you're getting so much in that first half turn and then so little in the second half turn. It doesn't make sense. But yeah, it's the trend of the masses that you have to sort of, you know, you have to go with.
Yeah, that is, it's a really interesting thing to have to fight expectations in that way. It's, I think that the taper of the pot maybe was what you were thinking of, where it's like, yeah,
yes, that's
it. Can be,
yes,
like linear or logarithmic. And so, and I can't remember which one is which, but yes. Yeah, that thing where it's supposed to get loud super fast, which is actually less useful than the other way around, but it's what people expect. So yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Or like when people, you know, I we haven't gotten these emails about Float yet, but I'm sure that we'll at some point get the thing where it's like, you know, the sensitivity is dimed, but I feel like the envelope still isn't reacting very well. And we say, okay, well, you know, tell us more about the rest of your setup. And it's like, well, you know, I've got a Strat and I've got it rolled back to about 2 or so on the volume control. You know, there's just, sometimes you have to get over that hump of like, okay, well, let's start with how this thing should work.
You have to help
people not be afraid to try diming the control and see if that's loud enough for them.
Yeah. Interestingly, with the moped, I had the same thing. Because like the first time I plugged it in, it's like different. I'd been playing it for ages with a Music Man, which is, you know, with Valentine, it's got like an active preamp and stuff. And then when I plugged the Strat in, I was like, why doesn't it sound the same? And you sort of sometimes you just like you get so used to one thing, and then you're like, oh wait, like I have to you have to change things when you change guitars and stuff like that. The other thing I guess, you know, I wanted to point out with this, which I think is quite interesting, is obviously this is your first digitally controlled analog pedal. And if I, excuse me if I get this wrong, but you're focused on, have been focused more on the DSP side of things, is that right? And yes. Then yeah. You've got the someone else who is more of the analog side. So was this kind of like the first time that you'd sort of collaborated, as it were, in terms of building a unit?
So we had done, Isaac is the other engineer at Old Blood.
Yes, that's it.
And when you look at the White Cap, that's a really good example of, there's a digital tremolo and an analog tremolo. And that was fully like, Isaac made an analog tremolo, I made a digital one, and then we smushed them together. Whereas with Float, it was a little bit more, on that one, I just kind of dove into the analog side of things as well. So that ended up being something that I learned a lot more about, like analog filters and how all of that works. I think partially because the way that the digital side of things had to interact with the analog side of things, also partially because it was 2020. So we were doing, you know, skeleton crew at the shop, and Isaac is he's sort of our analog engineer, but also our production lead. And like when something goes wrong with the CNC, he's fixing that. So we each have a lot of different, you know, things that we're working on. And so yeah, for whatever reason with Float, it just ended up being something that I dove into the analog side as well. So sort of stretching into a different microcontroller universe and simultaneously an analog signal thing. So yeah, it was a lot of learning for me. In that realm as well.
Again, I think just an amazing sense of achievement in terms of what you've done. I think it'll be an interesting thing to dive into. Certainly using two filters at once. What does the, how do you, or what can you do with the expression control? How does the expression jack, does that control just one thing, or can you kind of sync it to do other things? Or
yeah, so you can link it to basically the cutoff, you know, the frequency cutoff directly, or the rate control directly on either side. So you can, if you want it to just sweep one cutoff, you can set it up that way. If you wanted to sweep both rates simultaneously, you set it up that way, or both cutoffs, or, you know, different configurations. And basically it'll move between your minimum and your maximum. So it can open up like the wah thing, you know, if you plug in an expression pedal and just sweep the filter directly. Or you can use a slider to manipulate two rates at the same time, or use a ramper to, I haven't actually tried this yet, but you could ramp between two rates. You could have an LFO control over your LFOs, essentially. So
well, that is nerdy beyond belief, but I'm sure it, there you go. You haven't tried it. Now you know what to do for the rest of your day.
Yep, that'll be the next thing.
But I guess the last question for me, which I'm sure you might have a view on this, but obviously the one great thing about Old Blood Noise as well is that you as a team have always looked back on the things you've done and perhaps done a V2 or a V3 in some ways. And coming back to my question of like, when is it done? Are you looking at it now going, I'd do this. And do you ever think you'd see a V2 or even a V3? In the future, I guess it's kind of difficult to say, but always
varies.
Looking for improvements.
Yeah, I mean, I think with like with the screen violence pedal, for example, when that came out, I just thought, I love this pedal. I have not had any moment of, I wish it was more like this or more like this. With Float, I think because we packed so much in and like every idea that somebody had, I went, yeah, let me see how to see how we can get that in there. I'm already seeing comments from people like, oh, I wish I could externally sync it. And I go, man, that is a great idea. But it's also like I know that a big part of it is we packed so much into it that when, you know, thinking of external control, it was like, I don't know, I feel like that's maybe too much. Maybe we let this unit kind of live in its own world. So I don't know. Yeah, it varies. Sometimes you almost never feel done with a thing, and other times you feel like it, like it's complete. So yeah, I mean, with Float, we're certainly not going to be doing a V2 anytime soon, but it, often when things have been out for a few years, we revisit them. I mean, we put out the XS V2 earlier this year, that came out in 2017, and that was actually the first Old Blood pedal that I worked on as the, you know, doing the digital side of it.
Oh, really?
And then, yeah, earlier this year, we finally revisited that, put it in a smaller case with more control. And I think we were just able to make it a much better thing. So yeah, always in the back of our mind, we've got, you know, yeah, maybe we can revisit that at some point and do a deluxe version or a V2 or something. But as it is right now, we've actually only got new designs on the plate. I think we've kind of tweaked everything to our liking, and so don't feel the need for any V2s currently, but certainly never say never.
What is the Old Blood Noise Endeavors pedal that you're the most proud of?
I think it's still Dweller for me. There's something special in that one. Float, I take a lot of pride in just the sort of the work and the learning experience and the way that I was able to get so much in there. Also, a shout out, I mentioned that it was kind of all my design. Isaac was the one that figured out how to fit all of those controls onto a circuit board that would fit in that size case. So that was a big success.
Yeah,
on
that
Isaac's
looks
part.
Like that was probably a big.
They said, "Can
it.
We put it in this size case?" And I said, "I don't think so." And Isaac said, "Let me take a crack at it." But I feel like Dweller is something that came about from me just messing around. I was trying to make a phaser, but I was very new to pedal design. I've been doing it for maybe a year and a half, something like that. So I was still learning so much so quickly that it was like, okay, well, here's how you would code a phaser on this particular platform. Why do you allocate only one memory slot for each of the stages? What if you just gave them like 500 slots? And then it just sounded totally different in a way that I couldn't understand. But it was so unique and felt like something I hadn't heard that I kind of took it back to Brady and Seth and was like, I think this is our phaser pedal. Like this, whatever weird thing is happening here, I want to, figure out how to control it better. And that's what led to Dweller, is essentially a phaser that can be stretched into a reverb or a delay, kind of depending on how you set it. And so that's a pedal that I still use regularly, and I still come back to and feel like I learn a little bit of a new thing about it still to this day. So that's just the thing that still holds kind of a special place in my heart, you know.
It's a great example of, I think, what I think of Old Blood Noise Endeavors, the Dweller, in that it's it's a quintessential effect done very unusually. And I kind of, that's almost, that's how Old Blood works across the board. There's lots of stuff that's going to be very accessible. It's going to go straight on your board and you're going to make great sounds with it immediately, but it's also going to be able to do quite unusual things as well if you want it to.
Yeah, I love that it looks like a phaser and can be a phaser, but the moment you move that stretch knob, it's just like everything suddenly works differently. And I think that's that's where a lot of the fun in it lies.
What Old Blood Noise Endeavors pedal have you spent the most time with, Matt?
The Minim. That's to me, before the podcast started, and actually before you joined, Dan, we were talking about Chase Bliss pedals, and we were talking about ambience and pedal boards, and obviously your involvement in the kind of mood and that side of things. And then we were talking about instant ambience and the kind of most accessible, this kind of wave of pedals that can do lots of crazy stuff, but are kind of difficult to rein in, but the kind of magic sweet spot. I think for a lot of people that just find a pedal that kind of you plug it in and no matter what you do, it sounds good for that kind of music. And there are a lot of guitarists now who are doing that more kind of ambience thing and, you know, using the guitar as a kind of more creative canvas, I guess, if you were, in some ways. And for me, the Minim was the one that was just like, yeah, it sort of doesn't matter where I set things, it all sounds good. The biggest thing for me is just that I can't now save any of those great settings. You're just like, oh, it sounded really good this one time, and then I've totally forgotten where I set the controls. But it sounds, but then it sounds, you know, good another time you plug it in. And the way that I've actually been using it, which is some feedback, I guess, for the old Blood Noise team, is I've actually been using in the effects loop of the Game Changer Audio Plus pedal. Oh, so nice. That kind of works as like a swell, you know, or a hold pedal, but you, the held audio, you could, has gotten its own effects loop. So I use it to kind of feed a constant signal into that and then just leave that on infinite and then use this as the kind of manipulator of the held sounds. And I still stand by it. It's one of the, just the best instant, well, I mean, you call it an instant ambience machine. I think it is really up there with just the best. I think the Mood took it in an interesting direction using the kind of Chase Bliss format and that kind of stuff. But the Minim is just a nice, well, it was a nice upgrade from the Rever, but it still did a bunch of just great stuff really instantly. So for me, that's the one I spent the most time with and the one that I still love plugging in the most. Think
yeah, that's great to hear. Yeah, I love that usage of it too on the plus pedal, just further stretching an ambient pad into something even more.
Yeah, and I think one of the other pedals that I think kind of in fact Andy was a great user of this. I remember watching him talking about his one incarnation of a pedal board seems to change it every time, was the Darkstar, because again it had that kind of hold button on there, and again it was just instantly so good for just a more ambient reverb that just did more than like here's a note held forever. I guess kind of Electro-Harmonix Freeze kicked a lot of that off for a lot of people. I remember the first time we were in the shop we all worked in the UK, me, Joe and the other guys, and we were like, oh, the Freeze, this feels like a totally new thing, and it totally opened up this like crazy kind of world of people going, I only have to play one note on a guitar. but it didn't do anything apart from that. It didn't have any other sounds in. And obviously they've had other pedals since then. But I thought the Darkstar was a great one for that, because you literally called it a pad reverb. That's exactly what it did. I think that's the nice thing. Like you say, you come back to what you said is you've always designed something that does something different rather than, and something unexpected rather than like, oh, this is a distortion. And everyone goes, is it going to sound like a Tube Screamer or a DS1? You know,
yeah,
I think that's the great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I think I kind of want to say The Fault, just because that pedal, it made it onto my pedal board for a fair old while, and I'm very fickle. My pedal board changes all the time. But I think I saw, like, and of course, you know, I'm playing bass, but I saw Patrick Hunter, who is a bass YouTuber who I've got a lot of time for. I think he makes really interesting videos. I saw him use The Fault on bass, and I remember that we had one in the Guitar Nerds arsenal, but it's just sort of, you know, with our stuff. And I saw Patrick Hunter do this video, and I was like, huh, that does sound really good. And then committed it to my board, and it was absolutely fantastic. But, I think the pedal that I love the most is actually the Visitor.
Oh, yeah.
I really love the Visitor. Probably not for the right reason or almost the reason that you created it. I actually just love it as a really slow phaser. If you shut down the secondary control and just use it as a slow phaser, I think it sounds great, because the depth control goes really far. So you can get this ridiculous arc on a slow phase where it almost disappears entirely from the mix and then comes back in. I love that about it. It's like it can do the sort of MXR Phase 90 thing times 100, which, yeah, I'm a big fan.
That's great. Yeah, and that's, you know, you say you're using it wrong or whatever, but it's like, well, you know, we also voiced the single ones to be really usable in that way. You know, that's part of the approach to these pedals, is to do the weird thing, but also make sure that when it's doing the normal thing, it sounds really nice doing it. You know, going back to those envelope filters on Float, you want it to be able to sound like John Mayer if somebody wants it to sound like John Mayer, even if that's not the primary goal of the pedal.
Sure. Who would? But yes. Now, I want to talk about some other things as well, because Because actually, Dan, you have a fantastic Instagram account, especially where you check out pedals. And because, you know, you're so because you make fantastic pedals, it's always really awesome when you see someone who's in the scene checking out other people's stuff and giving very positive opinions on it, because it fills me with confidence that this is a good thing that I should check out. So I kind of wanted to pick your brains about things that you've come across recently that you've loved. Because, you know, that, like, I've never tried out, for example, the 1981 DRV, which you recently got, I think.
Yes, yeah, just recently.
I want to know what you thought about that. There have been a handful of other really interesting things that I've seen you use really interestingly on your Instagram channel. So I guess, yeah, the question is, what cool things should people be checking out? And first of all, talk to me about the DRV and why I should get one.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I appreciate that question. I'm blushing over here. I'm like, oh, I have a good Instagram? Thank you. That really was just, it was born out of, you know, oh, here's a fun sound. Let me just capture it. And I guess I'll put it on Instagram for posterity. So I just continue to do that. But yeah, the DRV is a lot of fun. I had a pedal that I was debating selling, and somebody in the Old Blood Noise Discord was like, hey, I'd love to trade this DRV because I just got a different colorway of the DRV for this other pedal. I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take you up on that. I've never really had a DRV at home, and it just does the rat thing, but so much better. It's more controllable and dynamic. And so I still haven't spent like a ton of time with it, but I've been really enjoying using it to further boost slightly dirty things. So to pair it with something that's already overdriving a bit and just use it as that final push to just add much more sustain and distortion. And I don't know. It's just a really well-voiced take on, you know, like the circuit isn't like a rat, but it was inspired by the rat. And so it becomes this really well-voiced take on that sound.
That's interesting, especially because I'm still in the market for a good rat. I haven't nailed that down. I kept almost getting to the stage of getting something, and then, like, you know, I'm constantly shiny things catch my eye, and I go and purchase that instead. So I'm still on the lookout for a rat alternative, because of course I have like two Proco rats, so I don't need a Proco rat. I need an alternative. So this is tempting. Do you have many rats? Have you played like many versions of rats? Would you say this is the best rat alternative out there?
So I've built a rat, like just a clone from like very early pedal building days. Like, let me learn about this stuff, and, you know, kind of building it, not from a kit, but just like almost a color by numbers, like Vero board build, that I really like the sound of. And the excess distortion is actually, so it's based on the old Ibanez Session Man, which appears to be based on the rat. Like, it's just circuit wise they're similar, they're not the same, but they're very similar. And so I think the DRV takes away a bit of the like woofy fuzzy thing that happens just when it's totally cranked, but it makes all, and again, this is sort of initial impressions, so it could also be that I just haven't found that setting yet, but I feel like it has less of that totally fuzzed out thing, but everything else is almost tamed in a way where it's not as harsh, and just the mids feel really well voiced. Yeah, I feel like I'm giving an early review, so I'm afraid to be too specific about it.
No, that's fine.
I'm gonna be like, actually, but yeah, no, I think that's the thing, is it doesn't seem to go quite as crazy, but in all the moments where it's not going wild, and it does still get very high gain, but it's like throughout the rest of the sweep, it's voiced, I think, a lot better than just classic rat that can get kind of just shrill and weird at lower gain settings.
I think I think what's interesting, obviously you being much more deep in the kind of traditional pedal building world than that, I'm amazed that the person behind 1981 Inventions has basically only made that product for what seems like the last 2 years, and the demand still seems unreal. Every time they put out a different color, it's like, oh, this is sold out now. I'm like, how many of these is that person selling? It's just like they last about 4 seconds before they disappear. I'm just amazed that they've done so well from just one single pedal. It's not had to expand their line in any way.
Yeah, I feel like people tend to get one and hang on to it. I'm assuming that's what must be happening, because yeah, you just don't hear a bad word about it. You know, it's just somebody said, I want a pedal that sounds like a rat, but better in all of these respects. And then they made that thing. And so it's been a consistent product. So
yeah, I'm keen to try it at some point. You buy one, Joe, and I'll
do that. Yeah, I'll get one. That's fine. I'm happy. I need to buy something else at the moment. I'm itching. I haven't purchased anything in a couple of weeks. It's awful. But Dan, you upload pictures of your pedal board every now and again on your Instagram, and it's changing all the time, which is good. That's good. I mean, you should tidy up a bit, you know. Your pedal board is messy, but there are only a couple of things that I seem to see that never change. And that's the I can't remember what the Thorpe FX is that you have.
The camouflange
and the Boss VB2. They seem to maybe be the only things that stay the same on your
those
board.
And the Flint has been a constant. I think the Flint moves around in its location, but it's always on there. And then recently the Calamity Drive / Midland Drive / it's, you know, we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that became a sound that I used a lot when, so my band was recording a new album last winter, and we had just gotten a VB2 at the shop, and I'm basically just perma borrowing it at this point. I keep saying, I can bring it back whenever you want, but I just leave it on my board because it sounds just so nice. Just putting the depth and rate both really low for just a slight vibrato, and then additionally running that into the camouflange again with the blend kind of low. So it's almost this like harmonic enhancer where it doesn't Ooh, read like a flanger. It just gives this little bit of motion and a bit of sparkle,
a tasteful lift.
What was the
Strymon pedal that I had on my board for ages, Matt, that I just left
the
on
Deco
did that the Deco yeah. Yes, that, yeah. I love a light flanger, because people think of flangers as being this ridiculous relatively tacky effect, but used like someone pressing their finger against a bit of tape, It can be so tasteful and such an enriching thing to your guitar tone.
Yeah, it's. I think basically, take the flanger and turn the resonance down is the key. Make it sound like a chorus with a shorter delay time, and it just to me that's what can open up just about any flanger. But the camouflange, the moment I got that, I had seen reviews saying like, this is the best flanger ever, and the demos always sounded great. I finally got one, played it, and went, yep, done. That's my flanger. So it's just been on my board ever since.
Amazing.
I'm with you on the VB2, though. I think that's the VB2 and the OC2 are the two pedals that I can't... My pedal board has basically got to the point now where it's got like 6 or 7 pedals on. I'm like, if I'm going to have a pedal board that I'm going to use like most of the time, it has to have those pedals on it. And the VB2 is the one where I think in the rare occasion I've taken it off, I'm like, I just need to put it back on now. That's just...
Here's the thing for me, Matt, that won't be popular is the problem is that for me that the digital version of the VB2 that's on the MS3 is very good. It's very good. And I took the VB2W off my board because I was like, this is a whole... And I use vibrato all the time. Like, you've heard my band. I use vibrato all the time. But the MS3 version is close enough that I resigned it from my board, even though it's probably my most used effect after drive. But the VB2 is obviously still... Yes, absolutely. That, along with the OC2, two of the best pedals ever.
Yeah, I would agree.
How often do you think you have three people in a room that all love a VB2?
Do you know, and
if you go back 10 years, almost impossible, because it was not a cool pedal.
I think I remember I've told this story once or twice on the podcast before, but yeah, after a period of working in this music shop down in Brighton, which regular listeners will know about, but not long after me and Jay and a couple of other people kind of started managing that shop, and we were handling a lot more of the secondhand sales. I remember a person came in once with a VB2, and at that point, I knew about Boss pedals, and I'd never seen one. I knew it was like they were like relatively like unpopular on launch. Like, I think the idea was it was supposed to replicate a guitarist's vibrato. It wasn't like the vibrato in an amp, because that was obviously all of those things were kind of labeled wrong or differently. It was supposed to mimic the vibrato of a guitar player, and of course it did a terrible job at doing that. It's just like no one has vibrato that like perfect, as it were. But I remember this one came into the shop, like looking to sell it second hand, and I was like, yeah. And at the time, like, they weren't going for much money at all. And I was like, yeah, it's probably worth, like, I don't know, like, 50 quid or something like that. And they were like, oh. And I was like, and then, like, it was one of those, like, the slowest light bulb moment ever, where I was like, 10 years later, I sort of woken up from a dream and gone, damn it. I totally should have bought that. And I never saw another one in real life until the first ever NAMM that I went to, which was NAMM 2017. And we had every single compact up to that point on display in the Boss booth. And they couldn't even find a VB2 in California, in LA.
Wow.
Yeah. Didn't
they speak to one order at it?
Well, I think at the time, you know, just they wanted one for the collection, as it were. And I think they ended up finding one on Reverb or something. And the guy was based in LA and he was like, yeah, I want like $400 for it. And they were like, well, it's the only one we're missing and we need it for NAMM. So they ended up spending like $400. And now, again, you can't see them. I can't remember the last time I saw a secondhand one come up for sale. Probably different in the US because you have a much stronger secondhand market than we do. But yeah, you very, very rarely see them for sale now.
Yeah, and I guess when I first read about it, it was like, you know, because I'm like a big fan of Graham Coxon's guitar sound, and they, you know, I had seen that, you know, he uses a VB2, and I was able to associate it with, oh, so that's what makes, you know, that vibrato sound. But at the time, they were just, you know, hard to find and expensive. It took until the Waza version came out, and I think even a couple years after that for me to actually finally try one. And the moment I plugged it in, I went, yep, that's the sound. It's just an excellent vibrato.
Yeah, absolutely.
The speaking about, you know, sort of missed opportunities with Boss pedals, Matt, specifically my one from GAC is when you, I think it was you, bought in an SP1, an actual SP1. Now, this was before Boss had done the box set and it had been reissued. And it was still revered at that time, but pedals were still in a different state than they are in now, and we put it in the case for 300 quid, and I remember thinking, that's a lot of money, it's a really cool pedal, and I really nearly bought it, and I didn't, just because I thought, £300, it only does the one thing and it's a great thing, but yeah, £300 is a lot. I do want the vintage pedal. I didn't go for it. Now I just checked, the cheapest I can find one on eBay is £900 now.
For a Coxwell.
I've owned one. And again, I think you have to be in a very specific guitar band to really use it. I think the one I had, was modded with an on-off switch, obviously apart from the foot switch, because the LED on those early ones never stayed on. It was always a check light. I mean, this is obviously the early days of the pedals. And they were like, we don't need the light on all the time, because you know when the pedal's on, you just when you click it, the light needs to flash, so you know it works. And obviously that changed. Amazing. But I've owned an SP1, an OD1, and a PH1. Just not all at the same time or together, which is a shame now, because yes, that would definitely be worth a decent chunk of money. So I try not to think about those things too much.
I'm sorry, Matt. That's fine.
No, but that's, I mean, before we go on to, I guess, the last pedal, but that's the one thing I'm always jealous of in the US, and maybe Dan, you've spent a bit more time on this. It's like Craigslist. We don't really have that in the UK. So I always find that people are like, yeah, I picked up this awesome like vintage amp or whatever on Craigslist for like 10 bucks from like a guitar, 10 bucks from some guy's garage or whatever. And we don't really have like garage sales or garage sales, as we would say. We don't really have that either. So it always feels like the only place you're going to get something is eBay or Reverb, and you feel like you're going to pay top dollar. Every time.
Reverb's always too expensive because everyone prices at a premium on Reverb. And the problem with eBay, in certainly in the UK, is that most of the gear, certainly the gear that I'm interested in, is exclusively owned by 65-year-old men who live in the arse end of nowhere who are unwilling to post anything.
So there's no chance of me actually buying stuff. So
yeah, yeah, I feel like
the sooner they all pass away and their stuff gets redistributed, the better. So I'll be able to buy it.
Yeah, I feel like I've never gotten those, like, yeah, garage sale, estate sale, those incredible finds. But I've also never, I haven't really looked super closely, because whenever I do look at Craigslist, it's just a list of things I don't really want that are probably perfectly fairly priced. But you know, I've not been one of those lucky people that goes, oh yeah, you know, this guy didn't know what he had. But it's always amazing to hear those stories, for sure.
Yeah, it's I find on, certainly on, and maybe this is, maybe bass players are nicer than guitarists, I'm not sure. They're certainly more tasteless, but maybe they're also nicer, because on all the UK like bass gear exchange groups, whenever someone posts something that's underpriced, it always just has 20 people in the comment section being like, mate, this is too cheap. You need to have a look at what you've got. So you can't get deals, which is actually really good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying I want to rip people off. I really like that it's a nice community. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I like that it's like that. It's a nice community. I did it once and I felt awful. Like, you know, I didn't buy it, but, you know, someone posted something too cheap and I was like, you know, immediately commenting on there being like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll DM you. And then someone after me was like, this is too cheap. You shouldn't be selling this. And I was like, oh, I feel terrible. I feel like the worst person ever because I knew that. But yeah, anyway, yes, before we go, because we're coming to the end of the podcast, I did want to spend more time on this. So we're going to talk about this now. Maybe we'll talk about it more on the Patreon. But outside of Old Blood Noise Endeavors, you've done something that actually I'm sort of just about to do with my band as well, which is very, very cool. You've released an effects pedal with your band, Plain Speak.
Yes, and I'm excited to hear about the Polymath pedal as well, but I'll bug you about that later. But yeah, so this was... basically, I was really interested in overdrives, but it didn't feel like kind of an Old Blood thing. Like, it, you know, at the day job, I was focused on digital things, or if I was doing analog stuff, it was more in support of those digital sounds. But at home, I would just keep trying different tube screamer derivatives or transparent overdrives, or I don't know, just various light overdrives. And I got really interested in that sort of genre of pedal. And I looked,
I'm so sorry to go, I'm so unsurprised that that's where this has come from, because this is right. I love a transparent drive. This pedal is right on my street. I love everything about it. I think some of the controls that you've added to it are perfect for someone who's interested in light overdrive. It has all the controls that you need to make the most out of it. It's dynamics, and you've really thought about the dynamics. But sorry,
yeah, no
continue.
Worries, I appreciate it. It's cool to hear that you're excited about it too. Because yeah, I think it. I hope that it's just a drive for people that get geeked about this kind of stuff. And so I could do a deep dive on the engineering of it, but the the sort of surface level approach is that I wanted something that could do the tube screamer thing. If you wanted to sort of focus the mids and have it clip in a fairly consistent way and have a bit of clean bleed, you could make that happen. But you could also do a much more full frequency open thing, or you could just distort like the high mids and up and have it kind of do almost like, I don't know, sometimes you hear pedals that are supposed to emulate dumbles. I feel like they have a lot of kind of high mid distortion while the lows are a little bit cleaner. There's just a lot of good takes, and you know, the Greer light speed is amazing for just taking a super clean amp and giving it a bit of grit, almost like what you would use a compressor for, but just using an overdrive to do it. I always loved that pedal for that. Or like the Wampler Paisley drive did a great sort of hot rotted tube screamer sound. And so pedals like that,
yes,
I essentially wanted one thing that could do all of those things and maybe a little bit more while it was at it. And we were having Plain Speak was getting together for a writing session because we were approaching making an album, and we were talking about just potential ways to raise money for the album making process. You know, we're just a little, you know, small DIY band, so we're just kind of always trying to figure out how to maximize things. And my bandmate Ben was like, would it be crazy to maybe try and release a pedal, like a signature pedal for the band? And I said, well, I just ordered a circuit board for an overdrive that is entirely meant for me and my taste. But maybe we could, you know, let's talk about it. And then we went in the studio and like I was using it and we found it sounded great on bass. And we basically just thought, like, yeah, this is a useful pedal, not just for me, but for other scenarios as well. And at the time I was calling it Midland Drive because it was mid focused. And that was actually the street I like lived on until I was 5 years old. So I thought it was a fun reference point. But then we decided to name the album Calamity. So we figured we'll call the drive Calamity Drive. And yeah, just in June, released it as a band, just as a way to, you know, yeah, help us fund the album and get this overdrive out in other people's hands too. And it's been pretty amazing to have spent, I spent so much time tweaking it to exactly the range of voicings that I wanted. But it's been getting such positive reviews from those folks who have gotten it or have gotten to play one. And so I think it's thankfully speaking to a lot of other people as well, which is, you know, I didn't feel confident designing an overdrive pedal because I feel like my specialty is, you know, things like Dweller. And so I thought, well, yeah, I mean, it's good for me, but is it going to be good for other people? And as it turns out, yeah, people like it. So it's been pretty amazing to see the response to it.
My favorite thing about it is the articulation control that you've added to just enhance how the dynamics of your playing work.
Yeah,
almost by because it's just a clean. It's essentially toggling different levels of clean.
Yeah, it's
blend.
Basically it's what's taking that idea of like how a tube screamer has an inherent clean blend, and it's just by nature of how it clips. So you can't really put any control over it. So I did the clipping differently in order for you to be able to either totally eliminate that or put a little bit of it in there or put a lot of it in there. And I feel like a lot sounds kind of like a tube screamer. A little sounds more like the light speed, and then none sounds more like a hard clipper. So you can almost get a rat type sound out of it. Again, it doesn't do the crumbly fuzzy thing, but you can get some of the lower gain rat type sounds out of it, I think. But yeah, so that art switch is almost a different approach to, instead of going like soft clipping or hard clipping, it's like just, it's kind of always hard clipping, but with a blendable clean that's just three different settings of clean bleed. And the hard clipping is asymmetrical, so it has a bit more, I don't know, the idea of creating something that feels a little more articulate, a little more, I don't know, buzzwords like tube-like. But something that, yeah, just feels good under the fingers, I think was the whole goal of it. I feel pretty good about where it landed.
Yeah. And you've managed to squeeze a whole extra foot switch and a goose control.
Yeah, so another fun part of using a drive like that, and when it does have a clean bleed too, is boosting into the front of it. But I feel like if it's a totally clean boost, it almost sounds too separate from the driven sound. So I was able to, I kind of took a clean boost schematic that uses a couple transistors and made it super high gain, and it seemed to distort a lot more than I would have expected. But that ended up being the perfect type of boost for this type of pedal, because the whole idea is to goose the drive section further. And if you do have some of that clean bleed, it's like the clean boost part is a little dirty as well. So you don't have those super hot transients that come through, because they're going to get clipped even in the boost part. So it just creates this extra level of dynamic control. And it's called goose, which is fun.
It just sounds like the perfect extra bit to a drive pedal. I love drive pedals that have a second thing, so that I'm not just, you know, so that if I want a little bit more, I'm not adding another pedal and getting another voice involved. I'm just, you know, enhancing something for where I want all the same essential aesthetics, not aesthetic, you know what I mean. I want all the same sort of things around that sound, but I want a little bit more of them, and it just... It certainly sounds fantastic. Everything where the goose control was engaged in the video that you and your bandmate did, I thought were absolutely fantastic. I actually thought it sounded great on that Mustang bass as well. I thought it was
a fun surprise of it. He was playing bass with a band called Labrys. He was on the road for a week or so, and you put the Calamity on his board, and I saw them live, and I was like, "How's the Calamity treating you? It sounded great." And he was like, "Yep, it was on the whole time." And so it was amazing that it's a great bass drive as well.
That is fantastic. And what a cool, exciting thing to do to get to, just to get to release a pedal as a band. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's rare that a band, I guess, has the facility to produce the pedal themselves. Because, you know, obviously with like the church's, the Screen Violence collaboration, that's a signature pedal for a band, but they worked with a pedal company to realize that dream. Whereas with Plainspeak, it was kind of like, well, you know, Ben can do the artwork and I can do the circuit and we can work with a local guy who does enclosures. And so we were actually able to produce a pedal fully as a band ourselves, you know, which I think is a rare position to be in.
That's very, very cool indeed. But yeah, dear listener, you can check it out on plainspeakmusic.com. The Calamity Drive is very good from the signs of the video. So yeah, so do check it out. We have run out of time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, so we are going to head over to the Patreon right now. We're going to talk about some more stuff. I'm hoping that Dan, you can help us fill a space on Matt's board with something. We've also got some suggestions from the Guitar Nerds Facebook group on what Matt can fill that space with. So we're going to go over there. We're going to talk about that. You, dear listener, you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special episodes and our back catalogue. $10 gets you a lot, plus I'll sing my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. Get involved in our weekly discussion. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. Dan, thank you so much
Thanks
for joining
so much for
us.
Thanks for having me.
It's been fantastic. Yeah, well, you have been wonderful. And obviously, Dan's going to be back to listener on the Patreon, so join us over there. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye. Yeah.
Spooky Appaloodiano. Spooky la booky la bakabooji. Silly bakaka kamuka da nokoda bakada lipada papada shabada boo. Yeah.